Welcome to a special episode of Good Beer, Bad Movie Night. In tonight's episode, we interview Mark Bailey. Now, Mark and I met last July at G-Fest, and ever since we met, I've been dying to get him onto the podcast. Since this was our first remote interview, we were using some new technology, and frankly, it's a little subpar, and it even cuts out a couple of times during the interview. So with apologies to Mark for the sound quality, and a great big thank you for being a guinea pig, I bring you Mr. Mark Bailey.
Okay, folks, on behalf of the Good Beer, Bad Movie Night podcast, I'd like to welcome a man of many, many talents. With us today is artist, writer, animator, monster kid, kaiju fanatic, unapologetic bad movie aficionado, and friend of the show, Mr. Mark Bailey. Good day, Mark.
Hello.
How you doing, bud?
I'm good, thank you. Hello, everybody. It's very nice to be on your podcast. Thank you. I'm immensely flattered.
We're both nervous and excited because we're using some new equipment and some new programs, and you are the very first remote guest host or guest star of Good Beer, Bad Movie Night.
Well, I've been looking forward to it. You and I have been talking about this for some time now, and I'm just very flattered to be here. So let's talk about bad movies. I was listening to you guys during the weekend I got married back in September, and I was dealing with like episodes 1 and 2 while working on a cartoon. The whole plan for the wedding had largely come to fruition, and all I had to do was just show up in a suit and tell people where to sit. And early in the morning, I would just get up and put on your podcast, and I was working on this very demented cartoon and listening to you guys really riff on these films and then talk about beer, which I don't drink, but I found it fascinating. So yes, you guys were part of my wedding.
Aww. She's like, I didn't expect it to play at the reception, though. That was right here. It's very hard to dance to them.
Right. So, yeah, you guys were part of my wedding.
And wow.
I think I was Facebooking you a little bit about it, and you were asking, like, dude, just please stop doing this and go get married. It's fine. But thank you. So, I'm about halfway through your entire catalog of episodes, and I personally own copies of Latitude Zero, The Battle Beyond the Stars, Howard the Duck, and Speed Racer. Howard the Duck, I've always liked when I was a teenager. The monster at the end was quite effective. The rest of the movie is an atomic turd, but the monster was quite good.
I think we mentioned that in the episode. We really enjoyed that stop motion. There was some color palette problems between the reel and the monster itself, but... Yep. It was really well done. I don't know who that... That wasn't Harryhausen, was it? That was...
No. The name escapes me. I'll think of it 5 minutes after we're done talking.
Just blur it out. That's fine.
Right. There's a movie called Dune in 1984, and that I would like to see you guys do that film because it's 3 hours long, and you guys would get wrecked watching this film. It would require that much booze.
With the David Lynch Dune?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I saw that in the theaters.
Oh, God, did you really?
I remember... I'm that old, Pete. I remember like, when it came out, it was so... People were so angry at this movie because they could not follow it. They had no idea what was going on. And they used to... I remember walking into the theater, and they had a little piece of paper out front talking about, okay, the Harkonnens are these people, and the Muad'Dib is this guy, and like it had like almost like a glossary of terms.
Oh, yeah.
So as you walked in, you would understand what they were talking about. It still didn't necessarily work.
Right. I mean, the movie lived on to become like a real cult classic, and it's something that I will watch maybe every other year. And just it did have a number of moments that worked. Brian Eno worked on the soundtrack, which was actually quite good. You know, the Freddie Francis, the Hammer director from all the horror movies, he was a cinematographer on it. David Lynch, of course, is David Lynch. It had a ton of great actors. The movie was incredibly expensive. It was this epic film that just... it was just weird. It was a very weird David Lynch film where he lost creative control and the whole thing became a big fist fight, and you know, done is done. So
I'm not sure him retaining control would have helped much.
Good point.
David Lynch films are just, it's like he had an idea and then he forgot to actually write a story to go with it. He just kind of like started filming, you know, and like let's see what all comes out. I saw Eraserhead several times. We owned it in college, and we would just pull it out and just kind of like try and figure out what the hell we're looking at.
Yeah. I think children should watch that and Pink Floyd The Wall on a regular basis. I want to see more. I want to see more of the more. I want to do more for the arts.
So we'll swing this by Kathleen, but a 3-hour film, she might kill us all. So I'm a little nervous.
She'll just have a nice nap.
Well, that's true.
And people, you and I we were joking about this yesterday. It sounds like your schedule is set, and I would not interfere with that. Once again, you guys put on a really good show. Your episodes are entertaining, and that's all that matters.
Well,
without that. But on the possibility you should become a millionaire and have a glut of time on your hands, I think you could break Dune up into 3 parts.
Oh, my.
Oh, God.
So.
An in-depth investigation.
You know, beer-infused. You can just pretty much knock over your whole liquor cabinet and just start reading the labels. You know, whole booze segments. So.
We can get our hands on some spice something.
Right.
That'd go well, huh?
Nice.
So, how did you guys come up with the idea for Good Beer, Bad Movie Night?
When I was in high school, the age of the VHS,
yes.
I wasn't afraid to walk up to the counter and say, that one is a crazy cover, I want to see that. I can also blame my father for getting me up at 11 or 12 o'clock to go watch Dr. Shock's X-Ray Chiller Theater.
That's great, man.
So we'd watch all those. We'd see Gamera. We'd see Godzilla. We'd see Dracula, Frankenstein, all that stuff. That propelled me into high school when I finally could drive and rent my own things, and rated R movies weren't a big deal in the house as long as Mom didn't have to watch it. And I'd have fellows over. Of course, that spilled over into college when I had new friends and found a couple of suckers that watched these horrible things with me. And then finally, as an adult, after college, I got some adult friends that were nice enough to come over and watch a few, indulge me in some of the films that I didn't quite want to watch by myself, because it is about the experience with others, in my opinion. We say it a lot on the cast. This would have been a lot of fun in a room full of people. And for a while we did that, and they got popular enough that my basement started to get way too full, and a couple of elbows got rubbed and some feelings got hurt, and so I stopped that, started a podcast instead.
That's amazing, dude. Those are the liner notes of Good Beer, Bad Movie Night. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I'm dumb. And
wouldn't have it any way.
Troy, are you dumb too?
Oh yeah.
All right, good.
This is why we're talking.
That's quite a story. That is impressive.
How about you, Mark? What got you into this down this
genre?
Yeah.
There was two significant episodes. We were fortunate enough. We were not well off by any stretch of the imagination, but for some reason we had cable TV and color TV very early on, and I always had that. So I'm 49 years old now. I'm very much a child. I was a teenager in the 80s. I was 7 years old when Star Wars came out. You know, it's a little perspective. There was a movie on cable. What was the Cheech and Chong, Gilda Radner, John Candy film? It came from Hollywood.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that was really, that was my kind of amateur introduction into bad films. And only a fraction of the films in that movie that are made fun of are truly bad. I mean, they talked about the war. They showed footage from War of the Worlds. They showed footage from Matango. And both of those are incredibly good films. They do not. They just had weird segments that they made fun of. But it introduced me to Ed Wood, and that which took me onto my own Ed Wood journey.
Oh, no.
And at my own public library, there was a book called The 50 Worst Films of All Time. It was written in 1978 by a guy named Michael Medved.
Wow.
He and his brother, the Medveds, would go on to write the Golden Turkey Awards.
Oh, no kidding.
All right. And the Golden Turkey Awards is that's the book that nominated Ed Wood as the worst director of all time and Plan 9 from Outer Space as the worst movie of all time. Now, those titles, the worst of, seems to change every 5 to 10 years. Culturally, from what I've noticed, it just seems to, there's always a new bad film out there. And it's great. I don't mind the research, but, you know, right now we're dealing with a movie called The Room.
Ugh, yes.
Okay, the mockumentary about that film, Disaster Artist, was quite good. That was very entertaining. Here we have a bad film inspiring an award-winning, an Oscar-nominated rendition. That's impressive. So that book, 50 Worst Films of All Time, led me to this constant curiosity about bad films, and I just started noticing that there were a lot of people who were kind of embracing the cliche about, oh, it's so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you know, there's a little more to it. You need to sharpen your language when you're going to pick on something. You know, be able to defend what you're saying. And I do a presentation called Bad Film A Go-Go, and it takes about 50 minutes to get through, and more than half of it is dedicated to the history of Ed Wood after he died. From 1978 to about 3 years ago, you wouldn't believe how many books and documentaries have been produced about that man's history. It's uncanny. And his movies are terrible, but look at how much effort has been put into this guy's his story. So I just find that, you know, I found that very interesting. Yes, his movies are terrible. They're mind-bogglingly bad that you can't stop watching.
So where do you do Bad Movies A Go-Go?
Bad Film A Go-Go, I do it at comic book conventions. I do, you know, I live in the New York City area, so we have a glut of comic shows that come around here, and I get to, you know, I just send them an email saying, like, listen, I do presentations, one about giant monster movies in New York, the other about bad film. I'm not asking for any money because I'll get sued. It's all intellectual property. But, you know, as a public speaker, I like to come in and talk about it. And, you know, I usually get 20% of the time I will get people responding like, hey, come in, here's a 2 o'clock slot.
Yeah.
I'm presenting Giant Monsters Attack New York City.
Oh, yes. We're going to talk about this.
I'm presenting that in 2 weeks.
Nice.
Right. And Pete, when you and I met at GIFA, I presented it there. I'm not sure if you were at that presentation.
I missed that presentation. I'm not sure where I was.
I will do it for you someday, and boy, it's going to blow your mind.
Mark, the first time I heard about you was on Monster Kid Radio, and you were talking about the Monster City map or Monster Attack map. I looked it up right away, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's just grown since then. And
yeah.
Folks, I'll put a link in the show notes as well as something on the Facebook page. Go to this. It's a blast just to click around. Go ahead. Why don't you describe it, Mark?
The New York City Giant Monster Attack map started off as a curiosity. I did a lot of tours of cities in Boston and in Chicago. I did ghost tours. So you get in a bus and they talk about all these hauntings. And both Boston and Chicago have really cool ghost stories. And I've watched a lot of monster movies, and I noticed that New York City gets trounced a lot. And I was like, oh, we can't have a bus tour because traffic is just so heinous. And trying to pull over and have everybody walk off a bus for me to point to a building and say, you know, a giant praying mantis did this building in, or King Kong, you know, did that building in over there, vice versa. It was too hard to do. So I said, hey, how about an interactive map? And being a visual artist and a graphic designer, I started animating with something called Flash, and it allowed you to do very rudimentary rollovers where I had a little footprint, and you roll your mouse over the footprint, and a little image pops up, and it shows you what happened in there. So I was just having a really good time with it, and the map has literally doubled in size since I first launched it. I was on Monster Kid Radio with Derek Cook, a very nice gentleman, and I got a little bit of traction out of that interview. I was only on his show once, and people think I've been on there multiple times, because I seem to I've bombarded him with emails and Facebook, and I just seem to wedge myself into the conversation every once in a while. So yes, I'm that intrusive.
So. Well, we look forward to you intruding on Good Beer Bad Movie Night.
Absolutely, here I am. I'm having my I'm finishing up my glass of iced coffee. By the way, that's my frosty beverage. So
beautiful,
nice.
I have a glass of iced water over here, so I'm having a virgin whiskey and water.
I have a Little Fish Rheinheiska what?
I'm jealous. Forgive
me, Troy. What is that?
It's a Little Fish Brewery is a new brewery. I think they're out of Athens. And the Rheinheiska what is it's a sour beer. It's a pomegranate sour, if I remember right. So I think that's what they told me.
Interesting.
Super light is so good. I love it. Kathleen and I both were obsessed with it.
Would that be a beer you might drink after mowing the lawn?
It would be a beer you might drink after mowing the lawn. Perhaps cleaning the pool.
Now, forgive me. You guys are in the Cleveland area. I'm from New York. The only Athens I know of is in Greece or in Georgia, where all the musicians come from. Is there an Athens in the Cleveland area?
It's south of Columbus. That's where Ohio University is located. It's not too far from where we are here in Columbus.
It is a super fun town, from what I understand. I have not made. Apparently, the Halloween party in Athens, Ohio, is to be visited, and beware those who do.
Yeah, that sounds cool, man. We have something called the Halloween Parade here in New York City. Hollywood has one that is freaky. And I always wondered, like, is it possible to get on a supersonic jet and go to both? It is just people would wear these outfits that are truly disturbing, bordering on disgusting, but they're so well made. You're like, oh my God, that's vile. But once again, I like these communities because I get to meet people from all over the world, and I do not want to brag about being from New York. So I love Cleveland.
Yeah.
I do own a Lake Erie Monsters hat. I am a fan of the Cleveland Monsters.
That's awesome.
I like them because I like their logo of a little critter poking his head out of the water. So yeah, I'll be presenting in 2 weeks. But what brought me to you guys is Bad Film A Go-Go that is presenting well. Some people seem to like it. I try to pay some respect to the Mystery Science Theater crowd, but just ask people to take, you know, okay, you can make fun of these films, but I just ask you to understand these things are incredibly hard to make, and you don't know that you're making a piece of junk until it's done with. And you can't just walk away from this and expect to have a job again in Hollywood. A director can't just throw up their hands and say, I'm done with this. This is stupid. This is going to be a piece of crap. No, you'll never work again. So they have to finish the project and put their name on it, and there you go. Are you guys familiar with the term Alan Smithy?
No.
No, I'm not.
Alan Smithy is a pseudonym for directors that have lost creative control of their project, and they have the right to put whatever name they want on the credits of a film. So when you see directed by Alan Smithy, it means that this movie lost creative control, and it usually winds up being a bad film or unworthy of you guys making fun of.
That's
but please, look that one up. Just Wikipedia that one alone, and even if it's half right, it's fascinating.
Is Alan Smithy's IMDb page like miles long then?
There are about maybe 50 significant films. There are about a few, maybe 100 TV shows. There were people who claimed Alan Smithy on music. There were people it's just an industry term for losing creative control, and I'm not putting my name on this, so I'm going to claim Alan Smithy, they call it. Yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff. I mean, what we call research for me to talk endlessly about bad film. That was another segment of my Bad Film A Go-Go, was talking about Alan Smithy. And not all Alan Smithy films are bad. Not all public domain films are bad. A good chunk of them are. But they do bring me a certain amount of joy, and here I am. So
I love that. I can't wait to go look. Are there any directors that we would know that have Alan Smithy to movie off the top of your head, not to put you on the spot?
There was one guy, one of the Monty Pythons, actually did a movie called Burn Hollywood Burn, and he took the title Alan Smithy intentionally, and this was more of a parody of the whole Alan Smithy situation. I'm a big fan of a movie called Hellraiser 4 Bloodline, and that
that's
movie
that's
had,
on your map.
It is. That's right. It is. That movie, it was the director claimed down Smithy that it was just, he lost creative control. Or it was a movie about, you know, it had the horror elements, it had time traveling, and it just wasn't working for him. And I remember reading in some horror mag about this, and this rant. He was just venomous about the way things turned out. And he said, all right, I'm not putting my name on this. American History X was almost an Alan Smithy film. The director, that's a very good movie, but Ed Norton moved in and actually moved some things around. Ed Norton, if you're going to have somebody usurp your work and fix it, that's one guy I would let do it, because he's very smart and he's not just an actor. He actually knows a little bit about filmmaking. But that was one film that was almost an Alan Smithy project. I think A&E made a documentary about it about 10 years ago. I happen to have a DVD copy of that, so you could probably go onto YouTube and just put Alan Smithy documentary, and you'll see what I'm talking about. So if you guys, anyone's that interested. A sequel to The Birds, which was a piece of junk, that became an Alan Smithy film. Pete and I are very big on Toho films, and there's one called Gunhead, G-U-N-H-E-D.
Oh, yeah.
Not a very good film, but the American version of it was an Alan Smithy film. So purely just by having my own weird, bad taste, I own 3 Alan Smithy films without even knowing it. I do not have good taste in films. I'm not saying they're good, and I'm not telling people, I'm not shaming people and saying, no, don't pick on this, it's good. No, I'm just saying, oh my God, I must be deranged. It's just a very weird coincidence. So that's part of my presentation is, you know, you have to ask yourself, do I have bad taste in movies? I think I do. As long as I'm not hurting anybody, as long as I'm not shaming anyone, and very few people have walked out of my presentation, I can keep a crowd. I make the audience feel smart, and I get them to hang on my every word, which is amazing because I'm by no means a magnificent speaker. So I will wear that badge of bad film. I find little nuggets that are worth saying, this wasn't so bad. This little piece was not bad. This was so bad.
Michael Bay had 2 films in the Criterion Collection, so yeah.
Are you serious?
No, I'm totally serious. Armageddon and what's the other one? There's 2 films that he's done that are in the Criterion Collection, so
I have in the Monster Attack map, I do have a section devoted to missiles and meteors about New York getting whacked. And I found Armageddon, and it was like one of 4 movies burned onto a DVD for like $3. You can get it used. And so I think I know what you're talking about. That movie has just not aged well. You know, it's all right. It's, you know, more of a Bruce Willis vehicle. But there was another film before that called Deep Impact, which was, yeah. I like that a little better. But
they were almost, they were coming out at the same time. I went and saw both of them.
Simultaneously.
And our favorite infamous Godzilla 98 that you guys should talk about.
I don't think Pete could take it. I don't know, like, Pete's got kind of famous for having just like offshoot rants, like what they like rage rants, and like, I think that whole episode would be a rage rant.
Pete, where do you stand on some of these people who actually try to say it's good? There are no wrong answers here,
right? If you called it Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, you've got my ear. But yeah. You called it Godzilla, and the most egregious thing is, if you've read the original script for it, Godzilla vs. Griffin, it's amazing. That is an amazing script. It's a gorgeous, it's a bloody film at the very end, the last battle. From that original script to what we got on the screen, what happened, folks? And it's so disappointing to know what we could have had, and then to know that we got this big pile of turd.
It was so expensive. They spent so much money making this great big sack of nothing, you know, this can of flat soda, and it was really heartbreaking. And the guys who produced it, I don't think they liked the subject matter. They just didn't seem to,
they didn't at all.
And what's his face, you know, the German fella. I just don't think they liked Godzilla films very much.
They didn't care. They weren't fans. They absolutely didn't care. They were barely aware of, and I think they turned it down twice before accepting the directorial duties. The thing that baffles me the most is, where the heck was Toho? As litigious as they are, as protective as they are of their franchise, it boggles my mind to figure out, how did you let this slip through your fingers like that? I don't get it.
I think they had to approve a maquette of the monster, and they probably had to approve the script. That it was, yes, they are incredibly litigious. I personally am a firm believer in intellectual property. Like, you know, my attack map and my presentations are largely based on other people's work. I did not invent this stuff, so that's why I can't make any money off of it. That said, I think Toho did approve it, and, you know, every once in a while you hear that there's no such thing as bad press. They quickly started making Godzilla films. They were going to wait a few years for TriStar to come out with their Godzilla, you know, epic series, and it died on impact. 2 years later was Godzilla 2000. Not a bad Godzilla film.
The second Godzilla film I ever saw in the theater, I was thrilled to see it.
Pete, did you see any Godzilla films in the theater? What was the other one you saw in the theater?
1985. I did see that when I was a kid with Raymond Burr, the American version, of course.
I was online to go see that, and we couldn't get in.
Oh, no!
Yeah. I mean, my dad took us to see Godzilla versus Megalon, and then we saw the Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla in theater. So, I mean, I was like four. But it'd be the movie had an absolutely stellar impact. And speaking of Godzilla, my cat is trying to jump on top of my bookcase with a Godzilla toy that I bought at Kmart on budget. Marked down like 99% because it wasn't selling.
Was that the Bandai from Final Wars?
I have the largest Godzilla 98 you can buy, and I found it in like some budget rack. I think they were using it to hold open a door. It was on sale for like, you know, $1.98, and I'm like, wow, this thing's huge and stupid. I'm gonna buy it. You know? I'll make a lamp out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, even then, that's a movie that I will defend a little bit. It's just when people try to tell me that it was really a good film, I'm like, I got thrown out of a Facebook group for picking on it. I was like, you know, yeah, I guess you're right. Why did I join this group if I don't think this is a good film?
It's not good. So,
once again, I'll go back to my first comment. What's important for good beer, bad movies that night is that you guys maintain your method. Yes, you have to grow and evolve, but you guys have a really good core recipe, so please keep at it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. I had the pleasure of meeting Pete Quint about 6 months ago at G-Fest in Chicago, and Pete and I are members of Monster Kid Radio, and I hit up their Facebook page and said, anybody from MKR going to be at G-Fest? And I had planned to record a few notes for Derek and, you know, just to send him some messages from G-Fest and tell him how everything is. That trip was my engagement gift. I got my wife a ring, and she sent me to G-Fest.
So. Aw, that's awesome. That was your first trip to G-Fest.
I made out on the deal. That was just such an incredibly good trip. I got to meet you. I got to meet a number of other people. I did present on Sunday, Giant Monsters Attack New York City, a history. I presented on Sunday, and I had like 200 people. And they hung on my every word.
That's great.
Like, guys, I'm just not this interesting.
They're like, this is here. This is why we're here. This is here. You're talking about our subject.
Yeah, exactly. That's ultimately, it was just a very small target, a nugget of this demographic of people that we all have this in common. And I could speak to it. I took pictures of something in New York City called the Lincoln Tunnel. And it goes from New York to New Jersey. It goes underground. And I compared it to a scene in a movie called The Deadly Mantis, yes, where they had something called the Manhattan Tunnel. I said, okay, now one of these is made in Hollywood, and it looks good, and it shoots on film, and this one's in real life. And I'm like, now which one do you like better? And I just pointed out that, you know, some things have to be, they use creative license to talk about monster, to make a monster movie or talk about New York, and there's a lot of set dressing. I went back to Godzilla 98 and talked about a scene. The only effective scene in the whole movie is when the monster came ashore and you just saw fins coming out of the water.
That was cool.
Yeah. That was the only scene. And
the guy was fishing on the end of the pier.
That guy walks down a series of stairs, and it makes people who don't live in New York think that the water is like 30 feet beneath the sidewalk, and the water is like 4 feet from the sidewalk. There is no stairwell to get to. And I had to, you know, I had to point it out. I have pictures of A and B. So that's what I did. On top of that trip, I also submitted my film. It came from the East River. They have like an amateur film video contest, or more like a video appreciation. And it was a lot of young people, a lot of wonderful children were just recording monsters beating the stuffings out of each other on top of their kitchen table, and they were putting music to it, and it was charming. And you know, once again, you know, for little kids, it's more than I did at their age, and it was cool. But my film was one of the six that were picked for an award, and I had won my first award ever as a filmmaker, as a, you know, middle-aged, balding, 40-year-old man going up against, you know, 8-year-olds with cameras. So I get to holler my little victory howl, and
you're like, in your face, Junior!
Right. That's almost. I had finally been recognized as an artist. I've been making films since 2003. I've been making one film a year. I had a good time with it, and I finally had an audience. My friend John had mentioned that, you know, wow, they laughed at every one of your jokes. Every joke hit. And it was a silent film with a little 1920s music accompaniment. Mm-hmm. And I set the movie as if, like, King Kong was set in the 30s. So I said, okay, what if a giant monster attacked New York City in the 1870s, and the tallest building was only, like, you know, 4 stories tall?
Yeah, that was a good joke, yeah.
Right. And then they send, you know, instead of airplanes, they sent, like, you know, dirigibles and blimps and balloons, and, you know, it would be a pretty boring air battle to have this happen. Now, I don't draw that. What animating is incredibly hard and time-consuming to do, so I have to do it more like an Iraqi and Bullwinkle fashion, where it's called limited animation, and it's more like moving a funny greeting card or taking a three-panel comic strip. And you only move the arm, but the drawing has to be strong enough, and the comedy has to be there for it to read. And that's really where my talent level is. I'm by no means a skilled animator. I just keep at it. So that's really was my idea of a giant monster attacking New York City, you know, in ye olde New York of, you know, the 1890s. And what if he attacked the Woolworth Building? That used to be a department store, and the building used to be one of the tallest buildings in New York, and now it's, you know, dwarfed. So that was really my concept, and I just went with it. And, you know, I was one of the six winners. And like a half hour after I won this award, I was still quite high and elated from it. My friend and I, we meet Pete, and he's got this cooler full of beer, his homemade brew. And I don't drink, so I had one of his Dr. Peppers. So I think my friend John had one of your beers, and he liked it.
Oh, good.
You missed that Soma cider.
Yeah, Soma cider.
Oh, that was so good.
I got more of that.
Yeah. I think Kathleen will fight me for it.
And what is that?
It was based on the Soma berries from King Kong. Yeah. It's a cranberry cider?
Right? Cranberry cider. Yeah, it's a cranberry-based cider. It's sparkling, much like if you just have a cranberry juice, make it sparkling. That's kind of what it tastes like.
That's funny.
So it's my favorite 50-foot brewery. I think that we were so disappointed to learn that Pete was taking it to G-Fest, because we're like, oh, this is all going to go? Okay, well.
I remember your explanation of mulled wine being fascinating. Once again, I don't drink, and I was just hanging off your every word. The way you describe things actually makes people want to try it. And I listen because I just want to have something to say. You know, if I'm out with my wife and somebody's having something, I can actually speak a little bit to it because of you guys. And not just like, I don't drink, I'll have water, which tends to make people uncomfortable. But I'm you know, a pacifist non-drinker. I don't give a shit.
Right. Yeah, I've listened to a lot of beer podcasts, and they can get real pretentious really quickly. So I try very, very hard to, and I'm not speaking down to anyone by any stretch of the imagination, but right. I don't want to bore anybody with a lot of gobbledygook. When it comes to tasting the beer and describing what's hitting the tongue, it's real important not to get, if you over-describe a wine or beer for that matter, you're going to lose your audience real quick. So yeah. I try to keep it concise and understandable. Again, not that I'm talking down to anybody, but the bigger the flowery the words does not make you smarter.
I just remember that you hear the bottle caps, and I don't know if it's pre-recorded or not. Nope. And you hear everybody taking their individual sips, and you know you really feel like you're there. You feel like you're part of the entourage. So what movies are you planning on doing soon?
Let's see. Well, our listeners voted on Space Hunter.
Yep.
And we're recording that here pretty quick. I've got a Luchador film I want to see in May. We're going to do a kaiju film in May for the June release of Godzilla 2. And gosh, I don't have my list in front of me.
It's fine. I wanted it off the top of your head. But yeah, I still want to see you do Dune and get totally wrecked.
Oh my.
So yeah, it's
going to all these comic book conventions. Are you a comic book fan at all?
I was. I own four, maybe four and a half boxes of comic books that I will now regularly go back and look at the influence that I came from. There are some comics. There are maybe about 20 comics out there that I'm still looking for. They're very rare, very stupid, but they mean a little bit to me.
Well, I see a lot of Kirby in some of your cartoons.
Yeah, I really got into who is the mad artist who did Captain Klutz?
Martin.
Yeah,
Don Martin.
Don Martin. I just to draw a Don Martin is that there. He's just such a everything is funny. Everything is funny about
absolutely.
That.
And so, absolutely. I got to meet Sergio Argonez here at one of the Columbus comic conventions.
That's amazing.
It was one of those moments. I'm like, oh my! I'd asked him to draw something. He goes, do you want a full page? Like, are you gonna pay anything? I'm like, I got $20. He goes, don't worry about it. And he just like did a real quick sketch of Gru for me, like half of a page, just a sketch of Gru. And I was like, oh, I'm shaking. I love that guy. he was so cool. This man.
So I go back to a lot of my old comics just to see how they tell stories, and that helps me make sure my drawings have a better attempt at telling a story, just to make sure, you know, people were like, Mark, what is this? This is rubbish, as opposed to the cartoon that just won an award. People actually got it. It went from A to C. So my last cartoon was Gorbot 2D, which is my tribute to Robot Mother. Absolutely mindless drivel, but I make one short film a year. I've made that promise to myself to do that, and sometimes you just, you know, you have 2 weeks to finish a cartoon, and you find yourself working on 3 hours a day, and you're like, you're tired of it, you hate this thing, and you want it done with, but you still have to finish the product, even if it's not very good. I can still say, yeah, I made a short last year.
Okay, I was going to ask about, like, we were going through your site, and I watched that, I was like, what the hell was that? And then I got to it came from the lake, I was like, okay, there.
Gorbot 2D was the cartoon I was working on while listening to Good Beer, Bad Movie Night.
Oh, well, say no more.
During my wedding weekend and before and after that. And the cartoon suffered from fits and starts, but I knew I still had to get it done. I kind of test myself with, you have to hand in something.
Right.
Or else I'll have a whole hard drive full of unfinished projects. So I was like, you know what? I have a number of cartoons that are weird. The art is good. It's okay. It's not going to, you know, I was more focused on getting out another version of the attack map, which is a whole other project, you know, and I'm going back to school, and I was getting married, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to give myself a strike this up. I just finish this and make your next cartoon a lot smaller.
That is so commendable, though. It was like finishing is the hardest part of any project.
Right.
And like to actually just be like, you know what, I'm going to let this one go. I'm going to get it out and let it loose, and it's free, and I've finished. That's my resolution this year. Finish things.
Well, no, you guys have a nice library of episodes going on. You guys have a lot more polish. But Pete, how many episodes?
We're on 24. The next recording will be 24, so 23 published on the first of every month.
That's not bad, dude. That's impressive.
It's I'm a little surprised it's gone this far, but my co-hosts make it fun.
I did one of my cartoons. It's called Hair Tall 7, and that was my tribute to those stupid hair commercials.
Oh, it was funny.
Yeah.
With the crash test dummies, and he was dressed as Freddy from Scooby-Doo. And
right. One guy, the guy who had his hair, has everything great that happens to him, and the other guy that has the comb over, you know, just goes through all this terrible mayhem. And it was, that was one of my biggest projects. I actually had recording time, and I had a retired attorney doing the narration for me. I mean, this guy, I could get this guy to say anything, and he was just having such a good time being on a cartoon.
He's done a couple of them, though. I think, did I recognize that voice from another?
My father, who has a very thick Brooklyn Judeo accent.
Okay.
My dad has a very distinct accent, so you probably hear him. I've tried incredibly hard to not sound like I come from Long Island, New York. I R slowly, but I've been to California recently, and people had me pegged at, like I was from the Bowery, you know, from the Bowery Boys. And it's heartbreaking. I tried so hard to work on my accent, and it's I guess it's part of my DNA now.
Embrace it.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I get angry, I start talking with my hands, and I drop my R's, and it's quite something. And then every once in a while, when I go to G-Fest and you meet all these people from all over the country, you get to hear some crazy accents that you just never thought, you never knew existed. You know, I never heard a Chicago accent before.
I did want to say one thing about Gorebot. The sound on that was the best of all of your animations. As soon as that music started playing at the beginning of the bit, it was head and shoulders above anything else. I really thought it was...
That is a royalty-free song that cost me about $20 from a company called Pond 5. If you like, I can give you a copy of it. That's you can have it. but I was going for some... I had about a week left before I was done with this cartoon, and I didn't have enough time to record audio, much less write audio or rewrite this cartoon that has dialogue. I'm like, I have to finish this beast. And all right, I'll make it a silent film. Find music. So I spent a day just looking through music catalogs, and I found one. You know, you have to put in search engines, and I tapped in like, okay, 1950s theremin, creepy, and these little keywords, and that song finally came up, and, you know, Shazam, there we are. So it's a cool song, you know. Yeah, it's royalty free. But thank you. I appreciate you watching my cartoons. So.
Yes. They're really charming and a lot of fun to see. So thank you so much, Mark, for being
pleasure.
On Good Beer, Bad Movie Night. Thank you for the kind words. Good luck on your schooling. Good luck with your new wife. Good luck with your animations.
Thank you.
I really hope to see you at G-Fest whenever you can make it back out.
Or Monster Bash.
Bash. I'm headed to that this year, I tell you that.
Yes, you did. You're playing either with an established band or something, but I know you're playing your horn.
Yeah, they have a house band called the Bash Brothers, and they want me to play my trumpet, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Nice.
Again, Mark, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
We had a ball. Let's do this again.
Absolutely.
When we can all find the time to do it again.
I'm looking forward to your next episode. Keep up the great work, guys. You are doing such fun work. Thank you so much.
I'd like to give a big thanks again to Mark Bailey for coming on Good Beer, Bad Movie Night. Now, if you'd like to go check out all of his incredible artwork, just head over to his website at foxtrotstudios.com, where you can see all of his animations, including It Came from the East River. And of course, while you're on that homepage, make sure to scroll down a little bit and click on the New York City Giant Monster Map. I assure you, it is time well spent. Shortly after we recorded the podcast, Mark gave me a call and asked if I could mention one thing about Derek Cook. Now, quite honestly, not only is Derek Cook an award-winning podcaster, but in my opinion, he is independent podcasting royalty. Monster Kid Radio is by far one of the finest podcasts out there, and if you have any interest in classic monster movies, I highly recommend checking it out. But recently, Derek had a Kickstarter funded to start a new podcast called Plan 9x9. Now, this is a really unique setup for a podcast where Derek and his co-host, Scott Morris, are going to chop up Ed Wood's Plan 9 from Outer Space 9 minutes at a time. Sort of easily digestible appetizers of this classic film. Now, Derek doesn't do anything half-assed, so I'm eager to hear how this turns out. It's a unique concept, I'm quite excited about it. I'm sure he'll post it on his Facebook page at Monster Kid Radio. And to you, dear listener, thank you so much for letting us bend your ear. You can, of course, find us on the Facebook at Good Beer Bad Movie Night, Twitter and Instagram, GBBMN Podcast, and our email address, gbbmnpodcast@gmail.com. Take that, Kathleen. Next month, we're heading out to Endeavor Brewing in Columbus, Ohio, where we're going to review a classic Toho film, The War of the Gargantuas. Now, it's not really a bad movie, in my opinion, but there is a reason for it, so tune in next month to find out what that reason is. And until then, dear listener, thanks for tuning in. Cheers.